Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. Fred Williams is on assignment. The evolution of whales from a land animal has been touted for years as the best fossil evidence for the theory of evolution. A couple weeks ago, I attended a debate at the University of Denver, a creation evolution debate between Christian apologist Bill Jack versus a young evolutionist named Travis Barlock. And students in the audience said that among Travis's favorite arguments to prove evolution was the transitional whale fossils. And sure enough, in the debate, he listed Rhodocetus, Pachycetus, Ambulocetus. And so, wow, we have today a guest who is a filmmaker and author who has interviewed some of the world's leading experts. In fact, the discoverers themselves of the so-called walking whales. This is Dr. Carl Werner. Dr. Werner, welcome back to Real Science Radio.
It's great to be with you, and thank you for having me on your show again.
Well, you're welcome, and I hope your books and your videos are selling well, Dr. Werner. I know that the world's leading creation organizations are promoting your work. I think that you have become a national treasure, Dr. Werner, because just this one topic, your books are filled with so many particulars of the evolution debate, but just the whale transitions. I think this is a game changer. And so what I'd love to do, if it's okay with you, could we talk through this at length, perhaps even do a multi-show series on whale evolution?
Oh, I think it's a great idea because, as you said, this is the best proof that's used by evolution scientists. There's very few good proofs, and this is their best one. Mm. And it actually is pitiful once you understand the details of it. So I think it's a great idea, and I think we should focus on this topic since this is what the evolution scientists would typically pull out of their back pocket for their killer blow.
But they sure do. Everybody from Richard Dawkins to, like I said, brand new graduate in biology from DU, Travis Barlock, they're all pointing to the whales. So to begin with, a little biology and then a little bit of evolution history. But biology, whales are mammals, but most mammals live on land. So why is it that whales are classified as aquatic mammal?
They're mammals because they're warm-blooded like other mammals.
Whereas fish typically are cold-blooded, right?
Typically, yep, as are reptiles. The whales actually have a few hairs on their face.
Wow.
And so they have hair like other mammals, monkeys, dogs, humans. Mm-hmm. They suckle their young. Mm. That is another feature of mammals. But as you said, the point that separates them is that they are warm-blooded.
And they give birth to live young.
Yes.
So they don't lay eggs. So
this becomes a problem then because now you have a mammal, and mammals are supposed to be on the land. Now you have a mammal in the ocean, so now you have to create a story. How do you get a mammal into the water?
And there's also dolphins and porpoises, which are mammals that live in the water. The theory of evolution claims that land mammals evolved from reptiles more than a couple hundred million years ago.
That's correct. And evolution theory would also say that land mammals came from reptiles, which came from amphibians, which came from fish. So the land mammals came out of the water, and now they went back into the water to become whales, which is a little bit far-fetched.
But they claim that that happened about 50 million years ago. So if you give yourself enough time, I guess you could believe that almost anything can happen. So about 50 million years ago, one species of land mammal, the theory claims, went back into the water and evolved into a whale. They point to the whale transitional fossils as a great success story. But generally speaking, isn't it true that there are leading, even world-renowned evolutionist experts who acknowledge openly that it's very rare to find fossils showing a clear transition.
Yes, and that's why this is so interesting. Dr. Stephen Jay Gould, the late paleontologist from Harvard University, pointed this out in the fossil record. There have been a billion, that's a B, billion fossils collected and are in the museums today. Even with this large number, you can't see the formation of the groups. For example, you can't see the formation of the phylum corals. Corals just appear. You can't see the formation of sponges. You can't see the formation of arthropods like trilobites. The groups just suddenly appear, which
angiosperms, flowering plants. They just appear. And
yep.
In each of these subdivisions, these disciplines, you have leading paleontologists say things like, well, it's a mystery. The evolutionary history of my specialty is a mystery.
Yes.
And that's a common theme.
And that's why then this becomes so important, because this one example with a few others stand out saying, oh, no, in this example, we have perfect intermediates, but it stands in stark contrast with the entire fossil record that makes you wonder whether this is just a bogus example and creation is true, which I've come to conclude, or this one example is good enough to ignore all the evidence in the other billion fossils, which is a bit of a stretch.
What I enjoy about your book is that, of course, anybody could quote a scientist, a geologist, a paleontologist, whatever the issue is, and just find some run-of-the-mill scientist to quote. But so often you quote from those who are leaders with specialties in the field that you're reporting on.
Yes, and now can you imagine this? The walking whales, the transition goes from Pachycetus to Ambulocetus to Rhodocetus, and those are three walking whales. And I got to interview the two scientists that found those three fossils and are the world's leaders. And I found it kind of odd, Bob, that those two scientists were in the same office building. Out of all the scientists looking for
in the world
animals,
yeah,
only these two scientists found these, and they're only at one university, and there was a teacher and his student.
Yes.
And they found them all.
A student and his mentor. And yeah, it really is astounding, especially when the one, Dr. Gingrich, finds a few teeth and a little bit of a jaw and a little bit of a skull, and lo and behold, it's a walking whale.
Yes.
And then that happens again and again. But before we get into those details, you quote from two scientists, one from the Smithsonian Museum, a Dr. Clayton Ray, and another from Berkeley, University of California at Berkeley. And both of these guys, I think they're experts. Dr. Clayton Ray of the Smithsonian says that the evolution of seals and sea lions is hopeless as far as what transitions led to them. But he says 15 years ago, the origin and the evolution of whales was even more hopeless than that of the seals and the sea lions. And it gave the creationists much to crow about. But now suddenly the paleontology of early whales is one of our most widely and justly trumpeted success stories.
Oh, that is a great quote. I forgot that quote that's in my book.
Yeah.
And that does point to this problem, is that the evolution scientists don't tell you when there are problems. They only tell you when the problems are solved.
Right.
You know, why weren't they screaming, we don't have the whale evolution fossils prior to 15 years earlier?
Right.
Why wasn't that, you know, trumpeted? No, they only tell you there was a problem after they think they've actually solved it.
That's
then
it.
They'll say, oh, we got it.
And that is a pattern that you could document for decades with evolutionists.
Yes.
Then there's Dr. Kevin Padian, who is not only professor, but curator at the University of California, Berkeley. And he really goes on about the whale fossils. Carl, you quote him saying, and everything is fully documented. It's meticulous, the work. And by the way, the book that this comes from is Evolution, the Grand Experiment, Volume 1, Dr. Carl Werner, and Volume 2 is Living Fossils, also tremendous. And they both also are accompanied by a video, fabulous quality video production. I don't know how you and your wife achieved this, Carl, but you guys have produced among the best literature and video contributions to the debate between creation and evolution.
Thank you.
You're welcome. But if I could quote from Dr. Padian, I mean, he's really all thrilled with the whale evolution. He's talking about the exhibit at the University of Michigan, which is where Dr. Gingrich and Hans Thewissen, where they were working, and they had a huge exhibit of whale evolution. So this is from Berkeley. Quote, "We now have whales with legs, whales with reduced legs, whales with tiny legs, whales with no legs at all, and their heads are getting bigger and their teeth are getting stranger. They have a big exhibit on it out in Michigan in Ann Arbor. They have all these things just sitting out there. I was just there. I mean, you really have to be blind or 3 days dead not to see the transition among these. And a big part of the question, why doesn't everybody agree on these things, is that it comes down to what you bring to the questions to begin with. We are all guilty of not wanting to see certain things."
That is so true, and it's so interesting. I had never heard of this display, and after we interviewed him, we then went out to see this best proof of evolution, and he saw the same display that I did, except I saw that there were fossils missing, and he didn't see that. We both saw the same display, but I see something different than he sees. I see no fossils in the most critical areas. In other words, they made up those areas of the fossil, and his mind accepted that there were no fossils there and just assumed that they got it right. It's interesting.
Yeah, it sure is, and we'll get to the details, but they find parts of a skeleton, and they invent flippers and fluke tails and blowholes. They invent it.
Right.
And it goes around the world. It goes on the cover of the Journal of Science as a stunning advance in the theory of evolution. Finally, evidence from paleontology of the evolution of whales. And how could a world full of evolutionists, scientists, how could they all be duped? It's just an astounding thing.
No, I always say the favorite and most favorable fossil for a scientist who believes in evolution, which I now believe is a false theory, is a partial fossil. See, a partial fossil allows the scientist to fill in the blanks with intermediate qualities to make a transitional fossil. The smaller the fragment, the easier it is to make up an intermediate animal. When I see these fragments, I think, oh my gosh, this is really dangerous territory to be making up the rest of this fossil. And the other scientists don't even pick up on that they're even doing this.
Baltimore has been in the news lately, sadly, and notoriously back in the 1920s. The Baltimore Sun was reporting on the Scopes monkey trial. And the big news there and at the New York Times was Nebraska Man, which apparently had evolved into Homo sapien. And Nebraska Man was created out of a tooth that was dug up in a farm in Nebraska. And they built not only the whole jaw, then the skull, the backbone, not only the entire skeleton, then they built the guy's wife, his kids, his culture, his tools, how much hair he had on his body. Then they found the rest of the skeleton. This is long after the trial was over. And it turned out to be of a pig.
Yes.
So they had a pig's partial, tooth.
A partial fossil, which is a single tooth, becomes a full intermediate animal because the scientist who finds the partial fossil is allowed then to create what he thinks the rest of it looks like, and it's an evolutionist best friend for creating intermediate animals.
So we'll be talking about species that have names like Pachycetus, Rhodocetus, Ambulocetus, and you quote an expert, Dr. Annalisa Berta, professor at San Diego State University. And again, she's an expert. She specializes in aquatic mammal evolution. I mean, that's pretty specific.
Yes.
She's bragging about these fossil whale specimens because they show us intermediates in the evolution of whales. And she says we don't often get that. We don't often get intermediates where we can actually trace the development of these characters. And she's just so excited that they have that opportunity with the whales. So I think that's pretty good setup now for what we're about to hear, because we're going to hear what they've found.
Yep, and again, I'd like the audience to hear what you just read. She's saying, in general, when you look at the other fossils in the fossil record, there's no transitional forms. This is unusual, and we think we actually have a good one.
Yeah, this whale transition is unusual because now we have it. Here it is.
Yeah, and it's odd. There should be thousands and thousands of animals that we have transitions for.
As you begin now in the chapter, once you set it up that this is the best they got, you ask the question, which land mammal did whales evolve from?
And that's a pretty simple, straightforward question. Yes. I mean, that should be a simple answer if this is the best fossil. Okay, what land animal went into the ocean? Okay, just tell me. Go ahead.
Well, it's not that easy, and I think we should step through some of it. What I would love to do is we go through your chapter 13. It's sort of an overview, but then you've added in the revised and expanded edition of your volume 1, Evolution, the Grand Experiment, you have added an Appendix F. It's a whale evolution update, and it tells the whole story. I would like to get into that because then we'll really be into the meat of the whole issue.
That sounds great.
Oh, good. But to begin with, it's either Charles Darwin thought it was a bear, or at the California Academy of Sciences Natural History Museum in San Francisco, they think it's a hyena-like animal. At Michigan's exhibit at the University of Michigan, their Museum of Natural History, it's a cat-like creature. If you interview a geneticist in Japan, do you recall what they think evolved into a whale?
Oh, they said they for sure had it pinned down that the closest living animal was the hippopotamus, which is a different group of animals than the other groups that you have been mentioning so far.
Oh, yeah, hippopotamus. And what's interesting is some scientists will look at the teeth, or they might look at the ear, or they might look at the DNA, like these biologists in Japan. They look at the DNA, and based on what they look at, others look at the fossils, and they come up with completely different stories of what evolved from what.
And these aren't just like minor differences. You're not saying, well, it's either this monkey or that monkey or this dog or that dog, you know, just minor differences. These scientists, all look asking the same question from a different angle, come up with different mammal orders. In other words, they're completely different groups they're claiming that evolved into whales. Mm. They're not even close to being on the same page. If you look at this as over time, they keep jumping from mammal order to mammal order to mammal order, four different mammal orders that they've claimed is the land animal that evolved into a whale. Mm. That's not even close, Bob.
Right, and it's fun to see them argue through this because you have the Japanese scientist versus Dr. Philip Gingrich in Michigan.
Yes.
Whales are carnivores. They're meat eaters.
Yes.
And so early on, it was popular to say that whales evolved from some cat-like creature or even a hyena-like creature as an alternative because they were meat eaters. But a hippopotamus is a plant eater.
That's a problem.
Yeah, a bit of a problem, especially when a good part of the argument is because of what their teeth were like. And here's how we figured out what evolved into a whale, because we looked at their teeth.
That's right. This is how an evolution scientist looks at this. They look at whales as three groups. You have the modern tooth whales, like the sperm whale, and then you have the modern baleen whale, which is a filter feeder, which is like the humpback. And then you have extinct whales, which are called the archaeocetes, which have teeth in them, large teeth. Mm-hmm. So evolution scientists believe the extinct archaeocetes, the one with the large triangular teeth, were the first true whales. So you have to get from a land mammal to these large tooth whales, the archaeocetes, like Basilosaurus or Doryodon or whatever. You have to get to a meat-eating animal. But now the Japanese throw this idea, no, it was a hippo, which isn't even eat meat. It's a plant eater. And so now you got another enormous problem for what was supposed to be such a clear proof for the theory of evolution.
Evolution claims to answer the question of how. Like, how did whales evolve? If we don't know whether they evolved from plant eaters or meat eaters, we don't even know which genus, which species,
which order
genus, family, or even order of mammals, right?
Yep.
We don't know. then we don't know how they evolved. And so Dr. Gingrich, you quote him, he's considered one of the world's leading experts on whale evolution. I mean, he found two, right? Two of the species?
At least. And he found what he thought was a walking whale, Cynonyx. He thought he found the walking whale called Pachycetus. And he's found others. Yes, he is.
And Rhodocetus.
And Rhodocetus, yep.
Oh, yeah. So there's, isn't it astounding, really, like you said before? These two guys, the teacher and his student, find all these walking whales.
And nobody else basically found any of them. They found the lion's share. And when you look at them, I can't see anything they're mentioning.
Well, you know, they just knew if we go to Pakistan, we're going to find a walking whale. So they go to Pakistan, they find one.
Mm-hmm.
It's very convenient. But Dr. Gingrich then is saying, well, you know, the main thing that is similar between hoofed hyenas and the archaic whales are the teeth.
Yes.
Really, this is the kind of argument that has been made over decades by leading evolutionists to figure out what evolved into what.
Yep. And you can't hang your hat on similarities because I have a whole chapter of animals that have similar characters, but they're totally unrelated. If unrelated animals have similar traits, for example, a bat and a bird, you know, one's a mammal, one's a bird, they both have wings, how do you say that similar traits then is a proof of evolution when in dissimilar animals have similar traits? See, it's really a very dangerous ground to get onto.
They call it convergence, only they have such extreme, they acknowledge such extreme examples of convergence where creatures that they do not believe shared a common ancestor with mm-hmm. that feature end up with that feature.
Mm-hmm.
And the most extreme example, I think, is bats and whales that echolocate. And it's
that's another good one. I hadn't even thought of that one. That's another good example.
Well, yeah. And the journal papers on this topic are pointing out that there's extreme similarity in the genetic coding for the proteins for bats and whales, extraordinary similarity. And yet they admit that they had no common ancestor that could echolocate. So if similarity shows they both just evolved it independently, then that means similarity can't help your theory of evolution.
That's right. You cannot base a theory on multiple similar traits when there's dissimilar animals have multiple similar traits too. So it's a very slippery slope when Dr. Gingrich started down this road saying the mesonychid, like the pack hyena with its teeth that look similar to a whale's tooth, that means it evolved into a whale. That was a very slippery slope he got on, and he eventually got burned on this.
Yeah, so we will get into that. I debated a famous evolutionist on YouTube, Aaron Ra, and in the debate he said, when we look at the fossils, we know how the tree of life went, Darwin's tree of life. And then when we look at genetics, it doubly confirms our tree of life based on anatomy and fossils. Well, in this debate at the University of Denver just a few weeks ago, this Travis Barlock, he made the same argument. He said, when we look at genetics, it doubly confirms the evidence from paleontology. Well, enter the Japanese scientist. And they looked at which kinds of mammals have DNA closest to whales. They say, you know what? It's a closed case. It's the hippopotamus. And so there's been like a dozen animals that evolved into whales, all with significant proponents, including Darwin.
It keeps changing. And that, again, indicates that this is a weak or possibly a totally bogus idea if the evidence used to prove the idea keeps changing and the old evidence keeps getting thrown out. That's a dangerous sign in science.
Oh, yeah. And the claim that, well, science changes and it's self-correcting. Sure, that's true. But all this points out the wild guessing that's going on with virtually no actual hard evidence. That's what the history of this points out. So you quote from another expert from Howard University, Dr. Daryl Domingue, paleontologist and professor of anatomy, and he specializes in what? In aquatic mammal evolution. Dr. Domingue says this, speaking of the hippopotamus, the genome being closest to whales, and the claim by the Japanese biologist, he says, to a paleontologist, this is nonsense because whales have been around in the fossil record five times as long as hippos have. hippos were very late on the scene, at which time whales had already been around for tens of millions of years. And to associate those two is really an absurdity to anyone who takes the fossil record seriously. So you either are going to take the genetics seriously, because that's where evolution would happen in the DNA, or you're going to take the fossil record seriously. If you try to take them both seriously, they completely contradict each other's story.
You could take the genetics seriously, you could take the fossils themselves seriously, or the geology of the fossils, the layering, and none of it lines up.
None of it. And then you could take the sequencing of the proteins and you get yet a different evolutionary story, or yep. The anatomy of the creatures, you get a different story.
Yes.
So every way of looking at them, and if you look at the teeth, you get one story, the ear another. If it's a tetrapod, you look at its limbs, you get another story. So, Dr. Werner, since we're about out of time, perhaps we could pick up and go ahead and do a second show, and we'll continue with Ambulocetus, because that's a stunner. And then we'll get into the Appendix F. We'll look at the details that really document this entire account.
I would love to do this with you, Bob. It's really a pleasure to talk with someone and to share this story that is so disturbing as far as being a science story, you know.
And this is Carl Werner, author of Evolution, The Grand Experiment, Volumes 1 and 2, and filmmaker of the tremendous videos that go along with this book series. Dr. Werner, I do believe this is going to be a game changer. I know that some of the world's leading museums have changed their exhibits because of your work. I think we've just seen the beginning, and I think you're going to rob them of their greatest success story.
I would take great pleasure to see the museums take down these falsified fossils that we're going to discuss in the next show, because it's really misleading to have fossil skeletons up that have no reality based on the real rocks that were pulled out of the ground.
Where the scientists themselves admit that the skulls, the skeletons are wrong, and they're still on display. All
terrible.
Right. Thank you, Dr. Carl Werner. Look forward to our next show.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. This is Bob Enyart for Fred Williams and Real Science Radio. Our website, realscienceradio.com, or you could abbreviate it, rsr.org. If you enjoy this program, we do not have a large foundation, a grant behind us. It's me, Fred, you, and the Lord. That's it. So you could shop at our store. Just go to rsr.org, click on the store on the top of the website, browse our science department. You could find Dr. Werner's materials. You'll absolutely love them. You could order them from Real Science Radio, and that enables us to continue reaching more and more people. In fact, by the thousands, including scientists, creation and evolution scientists, who have become fans of this show. And until next week, Lord willing, this is Bob Enyart. May God bless you. Turn up the real science radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.